Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Joe Cristiano and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you on Sunday, February 18, 2007. Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio where you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Rio de Janeiro, Berlin, or Stalingrad. It's time for us to take back control of our government now, before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. And now, on to our program. Good evening, everyone. During our broadcast tonight, we have a little change of venue. Our lines should all be held because we're having four people calling in about 3 minutes. So our regular call-in lines will be unavailable. Tonight, if you'd like to participate in tonight's broadcast, I'd like you to call our offline number. And that's, let me give that to you. Write it down, please. It's area code 903-551-2186. I'll repeat that. 903-551-2186. You can also send your email to comments at libertytalkradio.com. Okay? This evening is going to be a special broadcast. We have four gentlemen calling in, all with quite an impressive list of credentials, and we will be talking about universal health care. I will be interrupting the broadcast so that I can put them on the air. They'll be calling in, and we'll all be on the air at one time. Now, this is smoke, mirrors, and magic, and I hope it works, okay? But remember, if you want to participate, you'll have to call in 903-551-2186, and they should be calling in just in the next couple of minutes. All right. In fact, let me do the introductions now, and that'll save us some time. First, we have Dr. Kirby Cundiff. He's the Associate Professor of Finance, Department of Accounting and Finance, Northeastern State University, and he is a libertarian advocate. We have Philip B. Wilson. He's the Vice President and General Counsel of Labor Relations Institute, Inc. His firm assists employers nationwide in developing and implementing proactive labor relations and human resource strategies. Mr. Wilson is also an adjunct professor of labor relations and organization development in Northeastern State University. He's the author of numerous books on labor topics, including The Next 52 Weeks, Transforming Your Company into an Employee Relations Leader, Managing the Union Shop, Model Contract Clauses, and Model Reprimand Letters for Union Shops. Our third call-in will be Mike Remington. Mike is currently the Libertarian Treasurer for the local Tulsa area Libertarian Party. He's done that for the past few years. He's worked in radio and television for about 10 years and is now semi-retired investor, studying and practicing classical liberalism as often as the current laws will allow. Very good, Mike. Can't wait for you to call in. And last but not least is Greg Kittinger. And let's see if we have anyone calling in yet. Nope, we do not. Greg Kittinger is a father of six homeschool children, a volunteer for Crisis Pregnancy Outreach, a Tulsa-based adoption agency, and works for one of Oklahoma's largest television production companies. In his personal pursuit of liberty, he is a recent refugee from the religious right and a self-deposed... Here he goes. Okay. You're on. Hello. You're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Joe.
Is this Liberty Talk Radio?
It certainly is. And who's calling, please?
Kirby Kuntner.
All right, Kirby, I just finished with your introduction. Would you just hold on 1 second and let me finish up another introduction? I'll be right with you, okay?
Sure.
And you may want to turn up your telephone just a bit, or maybe speak a little bit closer into the mouthpiece, okay?
Will do.
All right, thank you very much, and just hold on. let me finish Greg's vita here. In his personal pursuit of liberty, this is Greg Kittinger. He is a recent refugee from the religious right and a self-imposed student of Austrian economics. And that's Greg. So that's four. And now we have one of our callers on the phone, on the line, and that's Dr. Kirby Kuntner. Kirby, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here, Joe.
Right. And this is not for you, Kirby, but I'll have to ask, is there anyone else on the line yet?
Yeah, it's Mike Remington's here.
Mike, very good. I guess you called it at exactly the same time.
Yes.
Very good. Mike, if you would also speak get a little closer to the mouthpiece of your phone, speak a little louder. We lose some of the volume. That's very good. We are waiting now for the calls from Greg Kittinger and Phil Wilson. Okay? And they should be calling in any second. Tonight's discussion will be on universal health care. And I'm going to start off with some open focus questions, and I'll allow each one of you to comment. We're going to have to be somewhat organized. So what I shall do is I shall just select someone to start the comments, and then we're going to have to be a little attentive to when someone finishes, and then someone else can chime in. Fair enough, guys?
Sure.
Okay. Here we go. We have someone else calling in, I think. I think. By the way, this is new to us, having this many people calling in at one time. Okay, do we have anyone else on the air? No, we don't. And we have a lot of dead spots, don't we, gentlemen? Okay, what we're going to do is Hello?
No, there, Joe.
Just Mike. Mike's still here.
Mike, and who else is there? Kirby, are you there?
Kirby, yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Greg, are you there? And Phil, are you there? No. Okay, we shall start as a threesome, okay? We'll go to our fivesome as we go along. Okay. Universal health care, as you know, is and will become a hot subject, probably second only to the conflict and occupation in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the war, or the war on terror, as we call it. And one thing that is on a positive note for a politician is that universal health care sounds. How should I say, is something positive that they can offer the electorate if they can figure out a way to do it and sell it. But it does sound positive relative to the war in Iraq. And it almost sounds like something too good to miss. Why not have universal health care? There are many people without health care. And if we can pool our services and lower the cost, why not? And I'll start, Kirby, since you've done some research in this area, I'll start with you.
Well, it's nice promising people things. Given the government's history, it seems very unlikely that they could actually deliver what they promise. Healthcare seems to be another area where government has caused most of the problems, and the general solution they propose is more government. How can the government, just by saying, you know, with a wave of a wand that we're going to have more health care, how can they actually make it so?
But would it not be, I think you did a white paper or thesis on the reducing the cost of universal health or government involvement in health care by initiating universal health care as it is in Europe, and actually the cost of health care would go down, would it not?
Maybe, but that doesn't mean the quality would go up. the continental European countries, many of them seem to have more actual healthcare resources than we do, and that means they have more doctors, they have more nurses, they have more acute care beds. Canada and Great Britain, for example, do not. So the real question isn't how much you spend on it. The U.S. government already spends more than most of these other countries, and we as a society spend much more than pretty much within any other country in the world. The question is, how do you get more resources?
All right. Mike, what's your take on that?
Well, Joe, I'm actually a freakish person. I fall into the rare, bizarre 15% category of people in the United States that live without any kind of health care. I'm out there on the edge, risking my life every day, living without health care, like some demented, crazy person. And whenever they want to throw out statistics to say that we need universal health care, the number one thing that they want to promote is they want to say, well, the number of uninsured humans in this country has grown to over 40 million or 15% of our population. And they say that as if these people are poor, so that they cannot afford health care, and they're just down on their luck, and shouldn't we all help them? Well, I, for one, of those 15%, do not want the help of others. I do not want health care. And I certainly don't want to be stealing out of someone else's pocket to get that health care, which is where we get into the use of force, where the universal health care system, if it were implemented in this country, as like Kirby was saying, it has been in countless other 30-some-odd other countries using socialized health care. It's a forced situation where I then would be forced to have health care, whether I want it or not. It takes away my freedom of choice.
Okay, thank you, Mike. We have a third caller coming in. Your name, please. There's someone else. Someone else called in, and I think I may have hung up on them. Hold on. Hello? Are you there? Greg? Mike? I'm sorry, Greg? Phil?
I'm here. This is Phil.
Oh, Phil, thank you very much. Phil, thank you for joining us this evening. I already read everyone's bio before we came on the before everyone called in to get that out of the way. I would ask, Phil, that you speak a little louder because we're losing a little tonality with the telephones and all the hookups that we have here. So if you can just raise your voice slightly, sort of like, you know, when you're asking your children to please, you know, pick up their toys, okay? And and put your mouth a little bit closer to the mouthpiece and that the phone, and that would be helpful. Okay, Phil, the question was that was posed to both Kirby and Mike. They have been on the air. The only one who has not joined us yet is Greg. But I'll pose the same question to you. The politicians today are going to be carrying the banner of universal health care because it sounds so good. It's a good thing for Americans. Why not? It will reduce the cost of health care. How could you be against something that will help, especially the impoverished, the old, the sick, the disabled, especially when you consider the number of people without health care today? What's wrong with that paradigm from your perspective?
I'll surprise everybody. I think national health care is a great idea. And the reason that I think it's a great idea is because it would be such a disaster that I think that would be the quickest way to make the idea go away here in America, would be to go ahead and implement it and then let everybody sort of live under it for a brief period of time, and then we can kind of move on to what's wrong with the healthcare system.
Okay, now, for the benefit of our listeners, why do you think it'll be a disaster? It's worked in Europe pretty well and semi-successful in Canada.
Well, I think I don't really agree that it's worked well in Canada and then in Europe, and I don't claim to be an expert at all on the healthcare system, but I think in general like, for example, if you look at the amount of money that we spend today on healthcare here in the United States, and then also if you look at you know, what is spent on countries that have socialized it, you can see pretty quickly that you have to look at both the quality of the healthcare that's delivered as well as the cost of it. And I think that healthcare in America is way overpriced, but we do have probably the highest quality of healthcare. And so really, to me, the issue is just, you know, is the government a good solution for bringing down the price of healthcare? I think the answer to that, if you look at anything else government gets involved in, is clearly no. And then the issue becomes, are there market ways or free market solutions to the quality, you know, the high quality of healthcare that's provided today in America? Is there a way that we could maybe increase competition or increase the number of participants, which would then reduce the price, which would then allow, you know, healthcare to be provided? I'm the opposite end of the spectrum. I do buy health insurance, but I pay about $12,000 a year for family health coverage, even though my wife's a triathlete. She couldn't possibly be healthier. I have a 3-year-old daughter who's healthy. I'm not as healthy as my wife, but I'm not that bad off. And we pay an exorbitant amount of money, and that to me is because the system is broken.
What is happening today to those people who do not have health care from a job? How is the nation accommodate these people? Kirby, I'll start with you. Kirby, are you still there? Mike?
Yeah, I'm here.
Uh-oh. Did we lose Kirby?
We might have. He'll call back.
Oh, here he comes. Okay. Okay. You're on Liberty Talk Radio. Who's calling, please?
Without healthcare.
Kirby trying to get back on.
Oh, Kirby? Is that you?
Yeah, I was cut off, yeah.
Okay. I thought you just didn't like Mike, Phil's answer, so you hung up on him. But
yeah.
Only kidding, Willie. What do you say to those people who do not have health care today and really need it? I mean, the politicians are saying, don't worry, vote for me, and I'll make certain, if I'm in office, that I push this agenda forward. All right. What do you say to those people who don't have health care, cannot afford it at this point in time? What's your answer to that, Kirby?
Well, there are many programs right now that are promising health care for people. I certainly know a type 1 diabetic last year that wasn't able to get health care and tried getting on Medicaid and those sort of things. The current system doesn't seem to be working. I don't really see how promising them more for their universal health care would help. The main question is, why is it so expensive in the first place? We don't talk about universal food care, because food is relatively cheap. Government has not interfered nearly as much in food markets as it has in healthcare markets. And I think the reason we're talking about this in the first place is all the government interference is what has made it so expensive to begin with. If we got government out of healthcare, of a free market, costs would go down, and it would be more readily available to more people.
All right, but how long would that take? Assuming that we remove the government from the entire system, how long would it take for average Joe Blow and his family to have health care that they can afford? Or would that ever be possible?
I obviously can't completely answer that question. My guess would be it took about... Certainly the big healthcare programs, Medicare and Medicaid, that were passed in the 60s caused doctors' salaries to go up by about a factor of 6 in that decade. So presumably, at least within 5 to 10 years, you could notice a big impact, but that is a long time for people waiting for healthcare. And I don't really think there is any easy answer.
Oh, sorry.
Mike, please chime in, Mike. You don't have to wait for me.
Okay. I feel that it would be almost virtually overnight that you would see the prices begin to drop if we got rid of the government intervention, and here's why. As the current system stands, your local family physician is only allowed to collect X number of dollars from Medicare or Medicaid insurance program payments, and after that, he is working for nothing. He is working for free at that point, and they don't have an incentive to continue trying to make money because they are not allowed to make it from the insurance company using the Medicare system that we have. So if that were to be removed, your local family physician, who now can make as much money as he wants to make, could suddenly stop taking a four-month vacation every year because he feels that he has to, or spend all of his time at the golf course. People would stop making jokes about doctors being at the golf course all the time, because the reason they're going there is because they don't have an incentive to keep working the rest of the year because they have a cap.
Are you talking about American doctors or Canadian doctors?
No, I'm talking about both. Basically, with the Americans, we have a cap on the amount of money that they're allowed to make, in a sense that after a certain amount of insurance has been paid to them, even here in America, they have a limit to what they're allowed to collect. Now, if that limit were removed, they could drop prices, in the sense that back before we had these new programs installed back in the 1960s, like you mentioned, before that, if you read books of stories of doctors, you know, hundreds of years ago, it was a situation where everyone got medical care because the inner necessity came about, where if a doctor saw that someone was less able to pay, then they could lower their prices in that condition for that particular situation for that person.
Is it a monthly cap? Is it a yearly cap? How is that set up? That part I'm not aware of.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it is. I'd have to go do more research on it. But the amount that I had read was saying that they've got a dollar cap from each medical insurance provider that they're allowed to receive on an annual basis. And after that, they basically have to be doing it where they say to their patients, are you paying in cash? And who today is going to be paying for their insurance or for their medical treatment in cash? They either got insurance, or they're just simply not going to the doctor because it's so outrageously expensive. But in that case, if those limitations were removed, you would start seeing people that that could go to a doctor that has cheaper prices, or to, they wouldn't have to use the specific recommended insurance recommended doctors.
All right, let me ask this. Right now, if someone applies for health insurance, hospitalization, whatever, with a pre-existing condition, there's a good chance they're not going to get it. And if they do get it, it is so incredibly expensive, it becomes unaffordable to the average person. Does anyone know why the insurance companies don't treat medical insurance like so many other insurances, like life insurance, where everyone is put into a large pool and everyone is accepted, and if the incidence of illness increases, the rates for everyone are increased. In other words, everyone's allowed into the system. Maybe your rates would be slightly higher, but they wouldn't be unaffordable. Right now, people who with pre-existing conditions are basically blocked from that system. Does anyone know much about that, and what the answer to that quandary is, that quagmire that places people in?
I'd like to weigh in briefly on this, Joe, and I think, is it Mike who is uninsured?
That's correct.
I think that is an excellent example, and I think, Mike, we've met, but you're in relatively good health, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I think what happens in insurance, and the way that I know that in our, you know, our small company, I mentioned how much money we, you know, I pay as a, you know, reasonably, not young enough, a reasonably young, healthy person, you know, I pay a huge amount of money, because what happens is, in our small company, we've got about 13 employees. Most of them take insurance. They're married to somebody who has insurance somewhere else that's cheaper. And then And those would be large companies that have a large pool of people. So those people choose the cheaper insurance. They make an economically wise decision to do that. So what happens then is that the pool of people in our small company sort of self-selects out of our very expensive insurance, and you end up insuring a small number of people. They rate the group based on just our small 13-person employee group. The healthy people choose cheaper insurance, and then only the stupid people like myself or the unhealthy people who are allowed to be insured just by virtue of the fact that they're employed by us, they're the ones who choose our insurance, and then our rates go up, pretty much every year, double digits for sure. Sometimes, it depends on the year, and we shop our insurance basically annually, and we take the cheapest deal, but it's constantly increasing because our particular group is small and not as healthy. It's small and aging, and we're not hiring a lot of young people, and so the rates go up, and that's how the system works right now. If you could do what Joe's suggesting, where you get larger groups that are competing, where insurance companies are competing on insuring very large groups of people, then the rates do come down.
Are there advocates on the phone right now who feel that maybe the government should force the insurance companies to accept everyone, including those with pre-existing condition?
No.
Anyone want to tackle that one?
Well, I don't think that's a good solution either.
No. And I guess the question would be, if you have somebody with a pre-existing condition, I would think that most insurance companies would be willing to insure them. It's just the price might be ridiculously high.
Right.
So you're saying in some situation they wouldn't quote anything.
To me, that gets back to the fact that the reason why the price is ridiculous is because the price of health care is high. And to me, that is a government. The government intervention, I don't think the government intervention should be to force insurance companies to accept people. That's I think the wrong direction. The direction to go is to increase competition among the easy one to throw stones at is pharmaceutical companies, and I don't think that that's necessarily the pharmaceutical companies are making drugs because it is profitable to make them, and they have a protected right to do that. I think you could argue on how long that protected right should exist, but a lot of sort of aggressive and experimental treatments that get developed in the world are developed here because there is a profit incentive to do that. But I think that there's a lot of ways that you could increase competition among medical professionals, allowing, for example, and you even see this even in today's market where things are I think are pretty screwed up. You still see a lot of these minor emergency medical clinics popping up, and there are a number of places that are catering to the sort of person who doesn't have health insurance, or to the person who has sort of a common, regular, everyday, a cold or a cut or a broken bone or something that's not a major issue. These places are popping up, and to me, that is the solution. Walmart, just as an example, is making and Target stores have also done this, making sort of small entries into this market. And to me, the very best thing in the world would be if Walmart decided to treat all the sort of everyday run-of-the-mill medical issues out there and could bring their market power to bear on those issues, so that now the high-dollar hospitals and medical facilities, are dealing with the stuff that is truly, tough to deal with. And if they were involved in those types of treatments, the cost for getting a medical checkup or antibiotic or just a basic treatment for something that's not major would drop down to nothing.
Yeah, I guess we're talking about revamping the entire system, sort of having health insurance similar to car insurance. For example, if you work for General Motors today, I think this is still the case, although they're near bankruptcy, you go to a doctor for everything and anything, and it's paid for 100%. That would be synonymous to you having automobile insurance, and they would pay for your oil changes, to rotate your tires. In other words, they would pay for everything. If we revamped the system, saying that, well, health insurance, or give more people the opportunity to buy into the system, where they just want major medical, you know, in case, you know, a more of a major illness, but the flu shots, the annual visits, you know, for your checkup to check your blood pressure, things like that, you know, of flu symptoms, those would be all on the patient's dime. Would that not help the entire system and relieve it of a lot of the pressure that we have on it now?
Drastically.
Yeah, okay.
I agree. Getting insurance to just cover catastrophic things like insurance is supposed to would be a very good idea. And of course, the problems related to that are due to the fact that health insurance is tax deductible if your employer pays for it, but things like car insurance aren't. So we have a system where it's always set up, your employer pays for it, you have to keep track of all the paperwork on every single little item you buy, a receipt for each time you get a drug, et cetera, et cetera.
What's the guesstimate if we got the government out and we stopped all of this foolish paperwork that had to go back and forth? I know my wife's an audiologist, and it could drive you absolutely crazy. She actually dropped Medicaid because it paid nothing, it cost her so much, and if someone comes to her and is truly financially embarrassed and needs help, guess what my wife does? She just does it. It saves her money and time. It frees up her office. The person who is unable to afford it, she accommodates. It's a win-win-win for everyone. And it sounds crazy. You're giving some expensive services away, medical services away, and it becomes economical. Now, that sounds almost crazy.
That's the way it was done back in the day when there was, you know, family doctors in the town.
Right.
I mean, that, you know, and yes, if there was someone who was poor, couldn't afford it, the doctor gave him treatment and said, you know, you can pay me whenever you can pay me.
Yeah. Is there an element on the medical, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I represent and do work for a chain of nursing homes, and they are paid, they have a couple, you know, they'll have a handful of private pay patients or residents, which means that, you know, those are people who are paying out of their pocket. But the vast majority of their their residents are people who are paid, you know, their services are paid for by Medicare. And that whole system, to me, is the most, it just destroys your dignity. So you start off by having to become absolutely dead, you know, not a penny to your name poor.
Right, you're destitute.
You can save a few thousand dollars, and until you've spent down your money to that level, you don't qualify. Then you get into this system that you were just talking about, Joe, where you're, you know, it's completely regulated. And I'll tell you, from their standpoint, from the nursing home standpoint, it does not pay to run your facility as a business. And what I mean by that is that you get a certain amount of money that you're reimbursed for providing services. And if you do what a normal employer or a normal, you know, capitalist would do, which is to run your place super efficiently and reduce the actual amount of money that had to be spent to take care of your residents such that you increased your profits, what would happen to you is that your reimbursement would actually, and it's built into the law, your reimbursement would shrink the following year.
Yeah.
And so your incentive is actually to waste time and money and to expend just as much as you're being reimbursed. You don't have an incentive to spend more than that, but you have an incentive to spend you know, every single penny of your reimbursement budget or your reimbursable expenses, so that you make sure that you don't lose your reimbursement the following year. You know, that system is broken.
Well, how do we get our politicians to say this rather than telling everyone what a good deal universal coverage is. This is a big problem. And oh, before we answer that, we had someone write in with a question, or actually with a comment. And let me see if I can turn around and read it. It's on. I have three computer screens here, and I have to have a rubber neck in order to catch everything. It says, on average, this is from a fellow Alex. He says, on average, a working doctor pays $90,000 a year towards liability insurance. Hence, one cannot afford literally to be a country doctor. Most doctors must work in a hospital to cover their own insurance. Any comments on that?
At least the numbers he's quoting aren't consistent with the statistical abstracts of the U.S. They had, I think, the maximum mean liability premium was for OBGYN. It was around $40,000 a year.
Okay.
Which is still a lot of money, but their median salary is around $250,000.
Yeah, so it's significant, but it doesn't block them out of it, staying in business or anything like that.
I guess it might block you out of being part time or something of that sort,
yeah.
Which could affect that.
That's right. Okay.
I mean, I'm not sure how much money that you clear, you know, as a let's say family doctor, but if you had a $40,000 nut to start off with, not counting, you know, paying for your building and paying, you know, for your office staff and all that, that would be a pretty formidable, you know, barrier to entry, to me.
Well, with universal health care, would it, in fact, the doctors, in effect, be government employees?
Yeah.
Well, they already are, in a sense, with the Medicaid situation.
Correct.
Right.
At the whim and the mercy of those rules and regulations set up by Medicaid.
Yeah.
Same thing goes for their malpractice insurance that they are required to carry. The dollar amount is going to be a reflection of the laws and liabilities set up by the malpractice insurance government agencies. And again, if it were a true free market system, the doctor that only wants to work part-time and be a country doctor that wants to go around and give away some of his services, he's going to not be taking as much risk as the guy that's doing brain surgery. And he's going to have different companies to choose from to have that malpractice insurance from the free market system that's not putting in into a specific pool of doctors where they're all lumped in together and the prices go up because this doctor over here is working brains and the other one over here is just checking people on checkups.
Right. Well, how do we change the political climate to, so some of these caveats to universal health system are brought to the fore rather than just hearing all the wonderful things about it? Anybody have any suggestions?
Like I said, implement it. Implement it and then stand back for the revolution.
Right. Well,
but up in Canada, they did it years ago in Canada, and they're still waiting on the revolution, and it's only gotten worse.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Whoever figures out the answer to that,
we're already on the path to. We're basically on the path to socialized healthcare in one sense. And once you've implemented the infrastructure, it's difficult to go back and rip it out. So up in Canada, for example, the people grumble and complain, and they tweak it a little bit, and they say, "Well, we're working on improving it, but." We've come this far, we really can't just let it fall apart completely. While, you know, the rich and the famous go to the front of the line, everybody else, regardless of their ailment, the person with a broken leg has to get in at the end of the line, just like the person that says they've got 2 weeks to live because they're dying of cancer. They also have to go to the back of the line, and everyone ends up being backlogged,
right,
regardless of your ailment.
Yeah, I want to make clear, of course, I'm joking about implementing it. And I will say this, I also agree that I think the die is pretty much cast. My work and my day job is doing a lot of work dealing with unions. And one of the more shocking stories that I've seen recently is that Andy Stern, who is the former president of, I guess maybe current president of the Service Employees International Union, but he's also the head of. He's the head of one of the largest unions in America and also the head and sort of inspired the recent breakup of the AFL-CIO. He's a very powerful person in the unions, and his most avowed enemy on the planet is Walmart. and unions have been trying to organize Walmart for years. Walmart and the SEIU jointly announced just a few weeks ago their support for a joint healthcare initiative, essentially trying to basically try to nationalize healthcare, but to get the employer payment system removed. And so, if you have labor unions and the political clout that they have, and then you have employers and the political clout that they have on the same side of the issue, in our system, that pretty much means that you're going to have a
let's not forget the AMA, who obviously is going to be very behind that, and the other government agencies behind them pushing the pharmaceuticals, pushing the medical industry into that same status.
Right.
Well, we've been on the pipe for about 35 to 40 minutes, depending on how you look at the clock or when we started. I'd like to thank everyone here. I want to give everyone an opportunity for a closing statement, and we started with Kirby. Kirby, we'll start with you again. Would you like to make a closing comment and a plea to our listeners as well, if you'd like? It's all up to you. Go for it.
There was at least one positive proposal in the State of the Union at speech this year, which was to make healthcare tax deductible regardless of who you bought it from, whether it was from your own employer or somebody else. I think it was up to $7,500 per individual or $15,000 per family. That would at least give the possibility of competition if your employer was willing to give you cash instead of healthcare and you could take it somewhere else. So at least that would be a move in the right direction.
Okay, thank you very much, Kirby, and thank you very much for participating this evening. Mike, you're number two. You came online to the second, so I'll give you the second opportunity to make a closing statement, as they say.
I'd like to say that I think that the things that Walmart is proposing and the Target, I'm sure other grocery stores even, will soon be able to have someone on staff providing a very cheap option for people that do not want to deal with health insurance, the AMA, Medicare, any of these sort of things, people that actually try and make a change in their life like I have that allows them to not ever have to go see a doctor for anything. I look forward to seeing that counterbalance the looming fear of a socialized medicine situation in this country.
Yeah, the one subject we didn't touch upon is the health of Americans, which is not all that good with rising diabetes rates, high blood pressure, inactive lifestyles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We don't do a very, very good job of that, a very sedentary lifestyle that we have. And all of that contributes to heart disease, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we don't take care of ourselves very well, nor do we care. But when we do get sick, money is of no object, is it? And that's a real problem. It's a double-edged sword. Okay, Mike, thank you very much for being with us this evening. Phil, closing statement.
I guess the one thing we also haven't talked about that I think is another potential solution to this is the fact that there are economies around the world, India probably the best example right now, that are training doctors and medical professionals that are of the same caliber and in some cases even higher than the folks that we have here, who can provide services at a just small fraction of the price that we provide them, and that's because the competition and the rules are different. And one solution that I think that should be thought about anyway is there a way to open up, because many services that are provided don't even require a doctor to place a hand on you, that they can, for example, view x-rays or make diagnoses based on based on information that in a flat internet-based economy, it's just as good as having somebody in the next room. And I think that there are a lot of opportunities to reduce barriers to world competition in the medical area, both in terms of the drugs that are made as well as medical services that are provided, even to the extent that some people many fly to other countries for surgeries that if you tried to do them here would cost an exorbitant amount of money, and the exact same treatment provided by medical professionals that are at least as competent as the ones here can provide them at just a fraction of the cost. And obviously, if you open up competition in those areas, then you have it's a foregone conclusion then that prices go down. So that's another area that I think that should be explored. National health care, notwithstanding my comments at the beginning, is a very stupid idea, and we should explore market solutions to health care problems.
Okay. Phil, thank you very much for your closing comments, and I appreciate very much your being with us this evening. It looks like probably a solution to our healthcare problems, the healthcare system, is competition, open the markets, selection, choice, both on the receiving end and on the provider end. That would drive down prices, make it more available, and give people the opportunity to choose what type of healthcare they intend to have. Thank you very much, gentlemen. What we're going to do now is play our bumper song, and let's see if that plays off well. Hopefully it will. Thank you very much, gentlemen. You may stay on the air, you may hang up. I leave it up to you. Thank you very much for being with us this evening. Appreciate it very much, and we'll be talking to you again. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, or you can always phone in your questions to area code 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you are striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned. Good night.